This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, coming up this hour, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb that is coming up in 15 minutes. We also are going to look ahead to future Hall of Fame inductions with the class that's first time on the ballot for next year, for 2024. Hall of Fame ceremony over the weekend. Joe Klecko, Darrell Revis, Rondé Barber, Chuck Howley, the late Don Coryell, the late Ken Riley. I'm trying to remember all of them that happened over the weekend. Am I missing one? Oh, DeMarcus Ware was inducted into the Hall of Fame this weekend.
Rondé Barber.
I did mention Rondé Barber. Joe Thomas.
Joe Thomas. His brother, Zach Thomas.
Zach Thomas, yep. So, so there's nine of them that got inducted into the Hall of Fame.
I got into it. I actually watched a good majority of it. I only missed a handful of speeches.
Yeah. Oh, well, you watched all those speeches?
Yeah, I missed Ken Riley.
Wow. Well, he passed away. Did his mother-wife get up there?
Who was it? No.
Girlfriend? Brother? Sister?
I think it might have been a kid.
Kid?
I think it was a kid.
No.
Same with
Don Coryell.
But I watched Don Coryell, obviously, but that was his daughter.
Daughter gave the speech, so... Don Coryell, I talked about this last week, man. There was no more fun football team back then than the Chargers.
Yeah.
They were such a blast.
No, and just, the whole speech was centered around the fact of, what he was like as a man, as a coach, how dedicated he was. I mean, the funny moment that came about was apparently when driving daughter around, I can't remember her name right now, it's bothering me, he would forget that she was in the back seat.
Oh, that's a little dangerous.
Because he was, on his way to work, on his way to San Diego State.
Right.
He would forget
to drop her off at school.
He would forget to drop her off at school. And he would also forget to take the trash out. Because I guess they had a long driveway, so he just put the trash in the car and drive to the edge of the driveway to throw it away. And he would forget that not only was she in the car, but she was sitting next to a big pile of garbage.
Oh, very nice.
And he would get to all the way to San Diego State and go, oh, wait, I forgot a step.
That's focus, man. That's focus.
That's football guy.
Hey, I do want to get to golf a little bit. Did you see Bryson DeChambeau shoot a 58?
I heard.
Over the weekend?
I didn't 58. See it because I still don't know where to find Liv.
I don't either. I didn't see it. But he shot a 58. He made a birdie putt on the 18th hole to shoot 13 under. 58. Fantastic. He made, no, 12 under. He made 12 under. He made 13 birdies.
13
so he made
birdies.
A bogey on the way to a 58. Good Lord. That course must have been a pitch and putt. What are we talking about here? 58.
Well, for him, yeah.
Hit a 200 and something yard 9-iron. This sport is ridiculous. Just cut it out.
I saw something. I was going to put this in the dumb of the day because it seems so obvious, but I'll just bring it up right now. It seems so obvious to me, this statement, but apparently golfers are more at risk of getting skin cancer than other athletes.
Oh, well, and, I guess that's true.
And I was like, yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah. They're out every day.
You know, you're,
there's
yeah.
no indoor practice facility. They can't go out and play 18 holes
indoors. I'm just saying, not even like professionally. Me and you type of person.
Right.
That, if we're, golfing at least once or twice a week, we're more susceptible to skin cancer than if we were playing another sport. And I was like, yeah. Who got paid to do that study?
Yeah, right.
I mean, if you paid me $1 million to do that study, I'd have been like, I'm done on day one.
Are you
one.
Playing beach volleyball for 5 hours? Right?
Yeah, even if it's just once a week, you're out. Because you don't play when it rains.
No. You play when it's...
Technically the other problem is, but no one ever does.
I have a friend of mine who's just taken up golf, and I said, you're in for a rude awakening on this, man. I'm telling you, it consumes you. It's an addiction.
Yeah.
There is an addiction. When you play, when you get invited to by your buddy on a Saturday and they're like, tee time is at 11, you get there at 9:30 to warm up. You're there all day. You ain't coming home. You might be home for dinner. Are you kidding? You'll be there forever. So it's an addiction, man. It's crazy. But yeah, I can understand it. Professionals. They're out there every day. I wonder how many, you ever want to know how many golf balls like Phil Mickelson has hit in his career?
Oh,
10 million? Like, what are we talking about?
Easily.
I mean, it's got to be insane the amount of golf balls he's hit in his life.
Yeah. I mean, whatever.
100 billion. I don't know.
Whatever. I would say this. Whatever the over-under is set at, bet the over.
Bet the over. Probably hit a quadrillion golf balls in his day. But a 58, that's insane.
58 is insane. That's ridiculous.
Craziness. All right, so the Baltimore Ravens. So Philip on Twitter, until we know exactly what Baltimore is going to do, the North belongs to Cincy. Yeah, I agree. But I also think that, again, I think their changes are good. I think they're good changes. But I agree with you. There is a question mark here of what it will look like, right? You're taking a quarterback in Lamar Jackson that doesn't throw a lot, and you're going to make him throw the ball like he's Dan Marino. Like, it's going to be a transition, right? You do have weapons. How do those weapons look? My question is, how does Odell Beckham Jr. look? Like, how will he look in game settings? You can say how good he looks in camp. Do you know, if I had a dollar for every player I was ever told that looked good in camp and then did not show up in the regular season as well as people thought, I would have a truckload of money, because it happens all the time. You know, you get people on, and you're like, hey, so-and-so. Oh, he looks good. Oh, yeah, he had great practice in camp Thursday. Great. What, can I do something with that? No, I can't do anything with that. But what usually is the problem is the opposite. So if you have a player that struggles in camp where he's not looking good, right, then you can almost translate that to, all right, I'm curious, I'm nervous about the regular season. But if you get a guy that looks good in camp, that means absolutely nothing until we get to game time, other than the expectation is he should be doing well. But Odell Beckham is a little different in that regards, because, again, if you're seeing speed, if you're seeing some separation in practice, that means that the ACL recovery was good for him, and he should be able to do that in the regular season. But it's Lamar Jackson is at the center of all that, right? I mean, Lamar Jackson being able to play in an offense where throwing the ball is going to be the first, second, and third option, not running or making, you know, quick work of his legs, that's made him an MVP, that made him successful, that's going to be the hard part. At what point do you tell him, what point do you have to retrain him in a way to hang in there a little longer? Because that's the dynamic with running quarterbacks that we know in this league, and that's why most of them end up not having long-term success. Because when they have success in that early couple of years, when they get into the league and they're quick with their feet and they can make big runs, Justin Fields is doing it now, then defenses are like, we're going to commit a guy to him, we're going to spy him, etc. Then all of a sudden that breaks down. Now they're being forced to, hey, when you were looking downfield at your primary targets, you gave them quick glances and ran. Now I need you to hang in the pocket and trust your offensive line a little bit and see where the separation could be coming from, and make just a split second longer, it becomes difficult for them to do. But nevertheless, I agree with you. I think this is Cincinnati's, you know, division. But if the Ravens win 10-plus games, they're going to be in it. They're going to be in it as division winners. They're going to be in the fight with them. I'm sorry. I know Burrow is fantastic, and I know Ja'Marr Chase is fantastic, and I get all that. But I'm not looking at the Cincinnati Bengals as a 15-win team here. I mean, I'm not looking at them as a 14-win team here. I think if you win 12, 13 games, if the Ravens get to 10, 11, down the stretch, close to the end of the season, it could be really interesting. But I think the two teams that are in this division that we're going to get to later on this week, the Steelers and the Browns, they've got the work to do. They have got to figure out a way to be in a conversation that's not including them today. And I think that's going to be tough. These two teams are really strong. But it really does depend, again, on the development and growth of Lamar Jackson in a new offensive system with Todd Monken. That was the biggest, you know, the biggest offseason decision that they made, was to bring him in. He's had NFL experience, but of course, what he did at Georgia drew a lot more attention onto his career. All right, again on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. We've got, of course, the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. One more thought on the conference realignment issue that happened over the weekend. And listen, I'm sad in part to the Pac-12's demise, even if I'm not a Pac-12 person. But the reality of it is, and this is something that we talked about last week at FuTech, and I wanted to bring it up again. This is such an interesting sport because in the end, it's extremely local. College football is a local sport, and it is local in its region, and it's local, of course, because you care about your team and you're not that interested in what's going on elsewhere. You can go around the Southeastern Conference, for example, and you can meet people who love Alabama and love Tennessee and love Georgia and love Florida, and they got no idea who's leading the Pac-12 division. They no care. Sometimes it even extends to the Big Ten, which is a little bit more in their time zone. This does change this, and I'm curious to where this is going next year. It is going to change it now, because with these conferences, how big they're going to be, with they're all getting rid of divisions, it does mean that you don't have to sort out a lot of stuff in college football. You can now look at a 16-team SEC standings and find the best teams real quick. You don't have to look at the divisions and say, wait, that division's leader would be third in the other division, right? You can sort of look at it differently. And that's what I'm going to be curious about. You are exposing teams now into conferences that didn't really care about them before. Oregon and Washington are going to now matter to people at Penn State, right? And now Utah, Arizona, and Arizona State are going to matter to people at Oklahoma State, right? As well as Colorado. It's going to be really, I think, interesting. I don't want to say fun, because I don't think it's fun when a power, nice conference like the Pac-12 is going bye-bye due to bad mismanagement. I mean, think about this. Can you imagine being responsible for collapsing a 100-year-plus conference that had Jackie Robinson in it at one point? Like, seriously. Like, George Kalikoff is the guy that killed this conference.
Yep.
Right? Larry Scott, you could say, also killed this conference. These are the guys. This is on them. They slaughtered this thing. They couldn't. It's like when a company has a terrible CEO and you know it has a terrible CEO. It's like, God, Coca-Cola did what? Right? Like things like that. That's this. They got the wrong people at the helm. And the wrong people just went, whoops, were we supposed to do that? Yeah, you're supposed to negotiate a media deal before the other conference did. No, we'll wait. We'll see what happens. We'll wait. Deion Sanders is coming. Yeah. But now all the money's gone. You see, there's a problem. They only have so much to spend. They're not spending infinite amount of money. So you blew it. And now it's killing your conference. Let's go. We'll come back. The good, the bad, and the dumb. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb. Good Monday to you. Hope you all had a good weekend, but we get right back to work. Good, the bad, and the dumb. What is the good of the day, Mr. Ron Culver?
The good of the day came from a bad situation.
Okay.
But sometimes we need a bad situation to give us that good.
I got you.
And this thing is borderline great, fantastic, epic, legendary.
Can't wait.
All right. So over the weekend, Chicago White Sox and Cleveland Guardians squared off against one another.
Right.
When Josie Ramirez hit a double down the first baseline.
Okay.
Did a head first slide into second, prompting a little kerfuffle with
a little fight
with Chicago White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson.
Tim Anderson.
And yeah, they got into a fight. Benches cleared. That's the bad that made this great happen, because I'm calling it great. And it might be even further than that. Cleveland Guardians radio guy Tom Hamilton had the call of the century. Tony.
Century? Okay.
Century. You ready for it?
Yes.
Here it comes. A swing and a smash to first by the diving Vaughn. Down the right field line. Kicks into the corner. Ramirez on his way to second. Head first slide. Safe and in to score is Jimenez. And another hustle double. Right over the bag at first. Now Hosey and Anderson square off. They're fighting. They're swinging. Down goes Anderson. Down goes Anderson.
All right, I like that call. Call of the century. He just borrowed that from Howard Cosell.
I don't know if it's a call of the century.
He didn't come up with anything original. Here's
where it's really epic, is the transition from baseball announcer to boxing announcer was seamless.
Right.
It was a perfect transition. I mean,
that was good. I'll give it that. That is a good of the day. That was a good call. That is a good call.
But it's not so
like when
fun.
Kevin Harlan talks about streakers coming on the field. Like that is that, you know. But that
I might
very
have been embellishing
tribute.
A little bit. Is that what you're saying? I might
yeah,
be embellishing
very much. Call
a little...
of the century. I was expecting, you know, but it was a good homage to the one Howard Cosell.
Yeah.
So that was really good.
It was
and
perfect.
The transition is great. Now, I would have been more impressed if he was talking about and a left and a white jab to the stomach, jab to the head.
That no, kind of, it, but I mean, Tim was, Anderson got
but
rocked.
Tim Anderson just went right down immediately. I don't even think there was a real fight. Like, it was just like, bump, down,
yeah.
down.
I mean, it was a second punch.
Yeah. So no real time to set up the pugilistic science of boxing.
Yeah, Ramirez just caught him flat on the chin, and yeah, Anderson's fell down. And then there, I don't know if you saw the videos afterwards when his teammates were helping him off the field. He couldn't walk.
Goodness.
I mean, Glass Jaw Anderson. I think that's what we have to call him now. Tim Glass Jaw Anderson.
If you're gonna get into a scuffle, you better stand your ground a little bit, right?
The other part of the video, if you haven't seen the video, you got to check it out because the other part of the video that's awesome. Is the umpire.
What did the umpire do?
Because the umpire, he literally transitioned from Major League Baseball umpire to boxing referee.
Oh,
because once he saw that those two, he was in between them, and once he saw that those two were going to go at it and nothing was going to stop him, he got out of the way.
He just stepped away and said,
he stepped away and then turned and, you know, grabbed the boxing referee stance. It was almost like this was premeditated. I don't know if it was in the script for Saturday, but it looked like it might have been in the Major League Baseball script.
All right,
just how everyone turned out to boxing.
Well, why get in the middle of two grown men?
Seriously, I mean they were going
to
fight no matter what.
No interest in that whatsoever. I'm like a hockey referee I wait for it to kind of come to an end, and then I step back in. Yeah. Well, we don't see a lot of one-on-one.
No,
baseball fights.
This might be the first one since Batista and Odor.
That might be, you're right. You might be right. Because usually it just goes right to full-flown bench-clearing melee.
And a lot of times it's a lot of finger-pointing.
Right.
You know, just a lot of, you know, this and this, and you said this, and I'm going to do this to you, and then, you
if
know.
If I was in another sport, I'd knock your block off.
That's right.
But I'm not going to do that. Just wave my finger. But you know I'm mad. Yeah. All right, what is the bat of the day?
The bat of the day has got to go to Giancarlo Stanton.
Uh-oh.
Saturday.
Yankees stink, by the way.
What's that?
Yankees stink.
Oh, he might be one of the main reasons why, because on Saturday, he was on second. I can't remember who the player was that hit a ball to right field, a good right field single. Stanton probably could have scored, maybe not, but it was just the fact that when he hit third base, he literally went into a home run trot.
Oh, did he?
And it's really disheartening. I mean, two things are crossing my mind. One is that he just doesn't care.
Yeah.
Or two, he can't run anymore.
That's you know what? That might
and
be
a lot
right.
of people are looking at it like, you know, are instead of putting it on Stanton, putting it on the third base coach and going, why'd you send him? You know he can't run.
Very true. You might be right.
Because the ball, I mean, the ball from the outfielder was a good throw, landed cleanly into the catcher's glove. Catcher turned really quick, expecting there to be a bang bang play at the plate. And the catcher turned, he like kind of froze for a second, like, what happened?
And Stanton
just literally stopped running as soon as he got close to home plate and just stood there and allowed himself to get tagged.
Wow.
So I don't know. We were talking about it earlier with Megan Rapinoe. When you have these star players, these Hall of Fame type players, when it's their time, it's their time.
Yep, that's true.
And you looked at that. When I look at that play, I'm looking at it like, it's his time. He's done.
Yeah, God, that team is so bad.
It really is. I mean, they have him locked in for like another 3-4 years or something like that?
I think they do. Yeah.
So,
I think you do.
I don't know. Do you just cut him and then say, hey, can we give you a Bobby Bonilla contract now and just, you know, pay you a couple million
over
each year?
Yep. Get off this team. what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is that and it's not really dumb. I'm kind of curious. I'm hopeful for this, but it seems kind of funny to me. But the largest search for the Loch Ness Monster in over 50 years It's going to take place later this month, Tony.
Why can't they find if the Loch Ness?
They are.
I know.
They are bringing out new equipment, new sonar equipment, infrared equipment. They're bringing all the toys. And all I could think about is like, why? Why now?
What,
you didn't do this last year?
Loch Ness is very, very deep. I think
right.
there's some parts as deep as the ocean. Deepest parts of the ocean, this loch is as deep. But it still is a limited of like the Loch Ness, the monster. If there is a monster in this lake, I read about this when I was in first grade.
Oh God, of course,
right? Like if there really was a monster, it would have shown its face at some other point. Why are we still looking for this thing?
But apparently, it hasn't.
Right.
I mean, this thing, the way the legend goes, it was a sea beast that attacked, or a water beast that attacked a man who was swimming in the loch in the year 565.
565?
565.
So 1,500 years ago plus?
Yeah. And we still can't find him.
Yeah, like seriously, didn't that get proven to be false?
That one, it was just a stick.
Yeah, they said that. Oh, look, that sort of famous one. They said, "Oh no, that's actually false." So clearly, this thing doesn't exist. It would have shown its face at some other point, but it has not.
Yeah, what I love is that some people, have attributed to the wakes are made by birds, a large eel, an elephant from a traveling circus.
Oh my goodness!
A Greenland shark, seals, a whale's catfish. Whales is W-E-L-S, so I don't know what that is. Otters, deer, tree, seismic gas, some type of undiscovered turtle, or a plesiosaur.
A plesiosaur? Like a dinosaur that survived?
That somehow survived all these years.
Yeah. Okay, thanks Scholastic News for making me believe that this was going to be a thing when I'm much older.
I swear to you, Nessie and Bigfoot, they just hang out with each other.
Right.
They just keep to themselves.
Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah, that's another one, too. I always thought we'd find Bigfoot by now, right?
Right? Seriously. Why haven't we found him?
And he's like and he has different names all over the place. I mean, I don't get him either.
I'm a little overwhelmed. I've got aliens. I got Bigfoot. I got Loch Ness Monster.
Speaking of aliens, did you see that video from Florida?
Of somebody on a plane?
No, this one was someone on the ground just like kind of filming a storm, and then all of a sudden, I'll send it to you, all of a sudden this like streak goes right across the sky.
Okay, so what's happening now? Are we getting invaded? What's going on?
I just think aliens are now saying maybe they can't handle it.
Are the aliens saying, all right, they're warm to our presence now, let's get moving. Let's go over there, check them out. So, I mean, look. If you saw an alien ship, what's your instinct? Do you think your instinct is going to be they'll open the door and they'll be friends, or do you think they'll try to eat you? I'm probably leaning on the latter.
I don't know if they would try to eat me.
Well, they probably would eat me.
I don't think so.
I look like a tasty snack.
I don't think it's the Twilight Zone, Tony.
Right, Twilight Zone?
Yeah, I don't think it's that version.
It's a cookbook!
I think aliens are already among us.
Please, eat and get fat. Ha, ha, ha.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Ken Wyman will join us in 15 minutes. We'll talk about the Ravens with him as we continue in his Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. Hey, you know what's on my TV here in the studio real quick? Just not to throw you for a curve. Little League Baseball Regionals. They're not in Williamsport yet. Is that time of year again, I guess, huh? We're going to have Little League Baseball on my TV for the entire rest of the month until we get to Williamsport?
Yeah,
I got Nebraska against Kansas. It's fun times. Little League World Series. When I was young, they used to put it on ABC, and it was such a big deal. It was a big deal. I don't know why, but it was an important event, the Little League World Series. And it was always won by Japan, and sometimes the United States would win. And it was when the United States would win, it was a celebration. whether it was the kids from Washington in the early 80s, the kids from Trumbull, Connecticut in the late 80s, I want to say, in between, you got a lot of that going on. So, yeah, Little League World Series. All right, so again, the Ravens on the clock. We'll have Ken Wyman in Baltimore to talk about the talk about them. Team I'm a little fascinated with. They're the rivals to the Steelers, but they have been a team this
week. I know, this is your conference.
This is my.
I held off on this. Normally, you know, in the past, we've always gone AFC East, NFC East. You know, I've done that, but I was like, you know what? I want to be here when we do AFC North.
Yeah, thanks.
I threw out the NFC North. I'm like, who cares? Sorry, NFC
right.
North.
Yeah.
You know, same old, same old. You know, I guess it's not same old, same old. Detroit's going to win it. But
yes.
AFC North is, it's such a fascinating division.
It really is. It really is.
Because I don't have a good feeling about who will win it at all.
But what if the Browns are good?
Yes.
Like, what if Deshaun Watson, who hasn't played like a full season, like guided a full season in what, 2 years?
Two years at least.
Right? So what if they're actually decent and, you know, he's good and they run the ball. They've always run the ball well. Defensively, they're not bad. Like, what if they're decent? Like, what kind of mess could that make the division? The Steelers went 9-8 last year. They won 6 of their final 7 games. I don't know if that matters in this upcoming season, but there's another, you know, it's more experience for Kenny Pickett. So it could be a very interesting division, and the two teams you kind of expect on the bottom could make enough of a problem for the teams at the top that it could be really, really interesting. But I think with the development of the Ravens, I've liked Lamar Jackson. This is going to be a year where we might see him differently. We might look at him in a different way. He could struggle with this. I mean, he really could, but he seems to be wanting to embrace this new opportunity to throw the ball as much as he can. And I think that is going to be exactly what Todd Monken wants to do. So, again, we'll talk to Ken Wyman coming up in 15 minutes on the Ravens. And, of course, your thoughts on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's on the news on college football realignment, college athletics realignment, I should say, and the bye-bye Pac-12, if you're interested in that. So, you know what I did over the weekend? I cranked up the griddle. And I made breakfast. I made smash burgers on Saturday.
Yeah, how did that go? Party.
It went better than I thought. And then on Sunday morning, I made a kind of a Denny's Grand Slam breakfast. I had eggs, pancakes, bacon.
Hold on. Time out. Yeah. Let me back this up a little bit, okay? It was your birthday weekend.
It was my birthday weekend.
Okay. I guess you're hosting, so you felt obligated to.
Yeah. Somebody should have said, hey, it's your birthday. Let me.
But nobody did. Nobody stepped forward, huh?
Nobody stepped up. They just watched me do it, which is fine. I kind of wanted to do it. Smash burgers were a thing that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Like, I got the meat. I mean,
in a sense, that's your birthday present.
So I had a couple of things with the smash burgers where I knew I was going to do it for this party, and I practiced on 2 different occasions how to get it right. So the first time I did it, I used the smasher. But I didn't put any parchment paper between the smasher and the meat. So the meat kind of got stuck on the smasher, and I had to I said, all right. So somebody said, put parchment paper. Did that much better the second time. Also, the first time, I took the burgers off the grill right onto the bun, and while they're juicy, they made the bun a little too greasy. So I put them on a rack for a little bit. It still kept the juiciness. So these are things I was working on and practicing to nail the perfect smash burger, and I did that. Breakfast, I had no idea. I was a Bob Evans cook back out there on Sunday morning. I did not know how it was going to go. I kind of warned everybody. I'm like, doing this for the first time, I'm going to have a number of different things on this griddle, so we'll see how this works.
What'd you
and,
go with?
I went with the bacon. I did a full package of bacon. Had enough for everybody. Then I got the bacon off and put that on a rack. Then I did the hash browns, cooked them up, tried to get them nice and crispy. Then I did the pancakes, and the pancakes turned out great. I actually ended up getting one of those pancake squeezers. You put the batter in the squeeze.
Yeah.
I got one of those. That turned out great. The eggs, there was a little too much eggs, so I couldn't really. I put them down. I made them just scrambled, and it was a little too much. That was something I needed to work on. But man, I was like, seriously, I was a Waffle House chef. out there. Spatulas going. That was my big weekend. My big party weekend on the grill.
That does sound fantastic, though.
It was fun.
Not going to lie.
It was a good time. It was a good time. So people enjoyed it. We had a good time. So it preoccupied my entire weekend with family in town and all being celebratory. Yeah.
Not for me. It was getting the house back together, organized. And so
you're gone for a month and a half.
Yeah.
Get everything
while
back
I was doing that. I mean, like I said earlier, I was watching the Hall of Fame.
That's great.
And I had it on. I mean, the speeches were fun. It became a game for me. Like, oh, let me see who's going to cry, who's not going to cry. Most of them cry. The only one that didn't really cry was Joe Klecko.
He didn't cry?
He didn't cry. And he even started off his speech saying that, I can't remember who it was, Howie Long bet him $100 that he was going to cry.
I got to think I would.
It was funny. It was like with certain people, it just triggered him. Like Joe Thomas didn't really cry. He got choked up at one point talking about his dad, who was in the audience, by the way.
Right.
He was talking about his dad. But then there was another moment where he was talking about his kids and he just paused for a little bit. You know, and it was like his three kids or four. I can't remember if he had three or four kids, but they were all sitting there watching him give the speech. And he was just talking about how, you know, you guys, you know, played around the football field. And he just had this pause. Like, okay, I got to stop talking for a half second here.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I mean, it's emotional. I mean, these guys are, they know when they see that bus, which is, I think it's the way it's done. It's great, by the way, that, you know, somebody introduces them and then they pull off the curtain, if you will, to reveal the bust. And it's just, you know, you look at this and he just, You could every single time you see these football players look at it and go, I'm immortalized.
Yeah.
You know, just that's the only thought
that goes
through his mind.
That's the wonder of it for me is you can say that, you know, it's pretty cool. People like to act big. They like to act tough. They like to act like it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? I don't care. It don't matter. It does matter. You're immortalized. This is forever. This is as long as this building is up. If it's still around in 300 years, people will see you.
Yeah. As long as football is a thing.
That's right. As long as football is a thing, they will see you as one of the best to have ever played the game.
Yeah.
Of the thousands of people who have played in the sport, you're one of the best.
Yeah, you know, he did.
Get immortalized in this thing. It's got to hit you in a way that you can't expect.
Joe Thomas did have two amazing stats, though, that we had to cover. One was the 10,363
That's
consecutive
right.
snaps. That is just unbelievable to me. The other one, which he kind of laughed about, he did make a joke about, was that he blocked for 20 different quarterbacks.
Oh, my God. That's funny. That's funny.
And he was
good
like,
for him.
He's like, sorry. He's like, you know, I blocked for more quarterbacks than anyone in NFL history. And he goes, sorry if I've forgotten your name, Josh Johnson.
Nice.
I'm like, oh, he must have. Yeah. Was he a Cleveland quarterback? Probably. I don't remember, but probably.
Oh, yeah. Probably.
But I can't. 20 different quarterbacks in 11 years.
You know, it's funny. He was the guy. Remember, he didn't show up for the draft. He went fishing.
Yeah. Oh, he talked about that too.
Yeah. He was like, he didn't want to be a part of the big show, the big deal. He was like, no, I'm going fishing. Whoever wants me, call me. Be on my boat with my dad. And people were like, well, he's not. No, that's who he was.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's who he was. And then when he got there, he was an all-pro his rookie season.
Yep.
And it just was excellence all the way through.
Yeah,
and they never
made,
went anywhere. They never did anything. Like you said, 20 quarterbacks.
No, in fact, it came out recently that Peyton Manning was trying to convince him to come to the Broncos.
Yeah.
And did everything he possibly could to come to the Broncos.
That's cool.
And it was, like literally told, he told Joe Thomas to go up to the general manager's office and just drop a stink.
Yeah.
Like literal one.
Wow. Wow. Ken Wyman's going to join us from the Fan in Baltimore. We're going to talk Ravens. We'll continue our preview next. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right. right, let's head to the Progressive Insurance guest line. Progressive Insurance, round out your protection with life, phone, and pet health insurance. Visit them for a quote at progressive.com today. Ken Wyman joins us from the Fan in Baltimore. Continuing our NFL previews, it is AFC North Week, and the Ravens are on the clock today. How are you, Ken?
Good, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. Let's get right to it with Todd Monken, and let's talk a little bit about the reason he's there and what they want to do offensively. What does it look like so far in training camp, and what was the overall thought process in trying to change what the offense was going to do?
Well, I think the Greg Roman offense got a little stale, and I don't know. John Harbaugh probably would admit this, but when he blew out Wink Martindale on the defensive side a year ago, he probably should have blown out Roman as well to see what Lamar Jackson looked like with a different offensive coordinator before they had to pay him. I think with Monken, if you looked at him at Georgia and seen him elsewhere, he's a guy that goes to the team's strengths. He will make sure that the best offensive players get involved in the offense. Whereas with the Roman offense, it was heavy run and the route trees were pretty archaic, and it just, the passing game was not good. And we'll see. Lamar Jackson now got a big bag of money. We'll see what he can do in a real big boy offense.
All right, let's talk about Lamar Jackson in terms of how much does he want to do this? How much has he wanted to do this? I mean, look, it's going to be different, but how much is he wanting? How much had he wanted to embrace what's coming ahead?
Oh, I think he's very much excited about this. You know, he's the kind of guy, and the last 2 years have been weird because of the contract situation, but he's the kind of guy that accepts coaching and is exciting about what Todd Monken brings. Monken's a different guy, too. He's more like a traffic cop than Roman was. Roman was more passive, whereas Monken's very aggressive. And early on in camp, you know, as they adjust to this, I don't know that I was out there last week, and that day he was not thrilled with the offense, but you know, coaches like to be unhappy because then they have things to work on. But, yeah, I think that Lamar is very excited about this new offense.
This whole – what happened over the offseason with Jackson and the contract and guaranteed money and franchise tag, no offers and whatnot, how much of that was media blowing it up a little bit, or was all of that sort of angst real?
There was real angst there, and I think part of it was Lamar Jackson didn't have an agent. If he had an agent, this probably gets done a year earlier because the agent probably doesn't let him come to camp a year ago without an extension. But Lamar chose to do this himself, and while there were some tough periods, it all worked out in the end, and he got his money. And I think everybody's happy now, but I think they'd be lying if they said there wasn't any angst in the middle.
Sure. Odell Beckham Jr., I know coming off the ACL injury from the Super Bowl, I know it's early, but how has he looked so far in terms of getting that step?
He looks great. He absolutely looks great. You know, the thing with Odell Beckham is I don't know that he'll ever be the guy he was with the Giants again. But if he's 75% of that guy, defenses still have to account for him, and he's still got great hands, and he still runs great routes. Him and the addition of Zay Flowers, the first round pick, who has looked fantastic in camp. Yeah, it's funny. The Ravens may have had the worst wide receiver room in football last year.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they're going to be the greatest show on turf this year, but this might be the greatest collection of skill position talent this franchise has ever had.
You know, and you talk about guys who are first-round picks needing to make a big impact. How much does Zay Flowers need to make a big impact?
I think, well, so if this was last year, I'd say it's huge. But with Odell Beckham and Rashad Bateman coming off injury, and he's got some soreness in his foot, so he's probably going to be back in a week. But he's still there, and you've got Mark Andrews. And the two young tight ends last year, both Charlie Kolar and Isaiah Likely especially made an impact last year. They have a lot of other guys, but I still think Zay Flowers is going to get the football a lot.
Mark Andrews, they always like either Lamar Jackson was running or throwing to Mark Andrews. What's his role now?
Oh, trust me, he'll get the football.
Good.
and Lamar Jackson, when Lamar Jackson starts to scramble outside, that seems to be the first guy he looks for. So I don't think you got to worry about Mark Andrews getting the football, but for the first time in a long time, I haven't even mentioned Nelson Aguilar, and Nelson Aguilar has had a really good camp. And if he was the first guy they brought in, and if that's all they did, then you'd kind of roll your eyes. But Nelson Aguilar is the fourth option. He looks like a guy that's going to be productive in this offense.
All right, defensively, what do the Ravens look like? Did Roquan Smith work out? Is he working out there?
Roquan Smith's an absolute stud, and he changed everything. And not only was he great, but he made Patrick Queen better. John Harbaugh refers to him as a force multiplier. And basically everybody around him got better when he got here. So you've got Patrick Queen playing at a really high level. Kyle Hamilton, their first-round pick a year ago, started to play better once Roquan Smith got here. And by the way, Kyle Hamilton is having a ridiculous camp as far as positive. Like, he seems to be able to do everything this camp. And again, it's just practice. And we'll see, but he struggled at times last year. He looks like a different guy this year.
Last year, let's talk a little bit about this. I mean, they went 10-7, but without Lamar Jackson for the chunk of games at the end. But how did they look in that chunk of games at those final games? I mean, they played tough against Cincinnati in the playoffs and in the closeout the regular season. But how did they were they just Lamar Jackson short and still solid, or how did you evaluate that?
Well, it's tough because Tyler Huntley is a backup quarterback, and he can't do the things Lamar Jackson can do. He's like Lamar Jackson light. He's a guy who can scramble, but he's not as fast as Lamar Jackson. He can't wiggle like Lamar Jackson. He's not going to make you miss, and he can't throw as well as Lamar Jackson. So he was adequate. If they had Lamar, a healthy Lamar Jackson, they probably are better than 10-7. And Mike McDonald, their defensive coordinator, seems to have whatever the elixir is to slow down the Bengals. A year before, under Wink Martindale, the Bengals ran roughshod all over the Ravens' defense. This past year, the Ravens were able to slow that Bengals' offense down. And if they had Lamar, especially in that playoff game, they probably beat them in Cincinnati.
Yeah, without question. So were there any big off-season departures that needed to be replaced?
Well, Calais Campbell on the defensive line, even though he's older, I think is a loss. Now, they think Justin Madubuike is going to take a big step on the D-line. The Travis Jones, who they drafted in the third round a year ago, they expect to take a step. They love what they got from Broderick Washington, so they like a lot of the young guys. Justin Houston, who led them in sacks a year ago, he just signed with Carolina over the weekend. David Ajabo, who was their second-round pick a year ago, who probably would have been a first-round pick if he didn't rupture his Achilles while working out pre-draft, they expect him. They are raving about him in camp. And Adafe Owe, who was their first-round pick 2 years ago, this is year three for him, and he's had a productive offseason. They're expecting to see a jump from him as well.
So I'm not trying to oversimplify this, but it feels like, okay, Munkin's offense, Lamar Jackson, Odell Beckham. But outside of that, everything else, the defense, special teams, everything else is okay.
Oh, well, I will say this. The corners, and Marcus Peters is gone, but he did not play well a year ago. They replaced him with Rocky Asin, who got hurt last week. He's probably going to miss a few weeks. They don't think it's serious, but he didn't look great in camp before he got hurt. They're going to be relying on like Jalen Armour-Davis, Pepe Williams, Caillou Kelly, who they drafted this past year out of Stanford. They are kind of short at corner. Their safeties with Marcus Williams and Kyle Hamilton should be really good, but I'm a little concerned about their corners. So, beyond that, if they can figure out a pass rush, and I think they're going to bring in a veteran pass rusher, whether it be like a Melvin Ingram or a Carlos Dunlap or a Kyle Van Noy, at some point they're going to bring in a vet. But if I had to say there's a question on defense, it's a corner because it's Marlon Humphrey and then a bunch of young guys.
Ken Wyman, again, the fan in Baltimore on the Ravens as we continue previews. Always good talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Anytime.
You got it. And again, I'm not – it's hard in this division, right? I mean, Cincinnati is there and Joe Burrow and the Bengals, and they've won the division and they played in the Super Bowl. But there is, if I see Lamar Jackson and this offense clicking and Zay Flowers and Odell Beckham, you mentioned Nelson Aguilar, if that is where they're going, I think this is a division that is winnable for them. I get it. I get what the feeling of Cincinnati, but it's not a whole bunch. It's not a complete difference on everything else, and it's more likely to work. You feel like it'd be more likely to work, and then it might be a chance for them to get in. They played Cincinnati tough in the season finale and then in the playoffs, but without Lamar Jackson, they were really not, it just was not in the cards. It was not in the cards. But again, new offensive look. Let's see how it does look. But when you talk about the AFC, right? We do this all the time with teams like this. When you talk about the AFC, we did it with Jacksonville too. There is the Bengals. There's the Chiefs. There's the Bills. There's Aaron Rodgers. There's Miami. There's even Justin Herbert. But let's not discount the Ravens. Let's not discount Lamar Jackson and this Ravens team. They gave up a second-round pick to get Roquan Smith. That's a great trade. I mean, that's a great trade. You wanted value, you got value. You made the defense better in that linebacking position. So if there's one A and one double A, they'd be on the double A list, but looking to get to A. All right, we'll continue. We'll talk about the realignment in college football, the big news over the weekend, and then what happened to the Women's World Cup. It's all coming in Hour 3 next.